Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Years old, my beautiful mother and my father moved me from a conservative Mormon home in San Antonio, Texas, to California, and I heard the story of Harvey Milk, and it gave me hope. It gave me the hope to one day I could live my life openly as who I am, and that maybe even I could fall in love and one day get married. If Harvey had not been taken from us 30 years ago, I think he'd want me to say to all of the gay and lesbian kids out there tonight who have been told that they are less than by their churches, or by the government, or by their families, that you are beautiful, wonderful creatures of value.
You commie, homo-loving sons of guns.
Well, let's go to Blue Monday. I've had enough of these sickos. Go ahead.
Blue Monday. How are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave.
It's the Savage Nation. Let's start with the trivia. Let's start with the fools of Hollywood. The Hollywood idiots of the day are none other than Sean Pencil. And that's character who wrote the story about a homosexual mayor. Frankly, I lived in the city when Harvey Milk was mayor. Big deal. I mean, other than the fact that he was gay, what did he do that's so important? You'd think he was Michelangelo, Albert Einstein, and Jonas Salk all in one tuxedo. What did the man do other than sleep with a man? Tell me what he did. Nothing. But this shows you the distortion of people in the world of drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Eventually, it will erode your mind, your soul, and your heart. And so my headline today on MichaelSavage.com and on The Savage Nation is quite direct. The Hollywood gays have hijacked the Oscars to push their agenda. What should I do? Ask you if you agree with me? I know you agree with me. And if you don't listen to the show. Go listen to NPR. Okay? Either go listen to NPR or watch that other slime ball who was up there introducing documentaries. Another genius who failed in radio. On the right side of my website, michaelsavage.com, is a much more important story. And the question is Soros running the world's economic systems? Is he the mastermind who created Obama and installed him into power? The question that I raised is, how is the Soros Fund doing these days? And I found the answer. The answer is simple. Billionaire investor and money changer in the temple of reality, George Soros, has a hedge fund. His hedge fund made 8% in 2008, while most others crashed. Now, I'm only going to ask a logical question, not because I doubt Mr. Soros' integrity. We know he's a fine man. We know he's a wonderful man. His family fled the Nazis, and the rest is history. I mean, it's a Horatio Alger story. What a wonderful human being he is, how much he's done for making certain that marijuana is not criminalized and spreading other such wonders around the planet, collapsing economies across Eastern Europe, steaming up Russia. A wonderful human being. Almost broke the Bank of England, steamed up anti-Semitism in the world by almost breaking the Malaysian currency. A super human being. So I'm going to only ask a simple question. We were told during the Madoff scandal, which is still ongoing, even though he's living in his penthouse, you know, if you stole a library book, the tax squad would come in and you'd be in jail. But Madoff allegedly stole $50 billion. He's still in his penthouse. Why? Say rotten, stinking, smelly judges in the SEC. Say a rotten system that stinks from the top to the bottom. So we were told during the Madoff scandal, weren't we, that if a man is reporting earnings while all others are reporting losses, you have to ask yourself, is it too good to be true? How could Soros' hedge fund have made 8% in 2008 while others have crashed and burned around him? Answer. Well, look, in America you can get the best politicians you can buy, they used to say. Now it's spread up to the level of the Banana Republic president that we have. We now have a Banana Republic presidency. Now, why do I say that? Well, I'll give you a few reasons, but I'll give you one specific. You want one specific? Here's one specific. Obama has insulted the United Kingdom by picking a fundraising crony, a lawyer and banker from Chicago, to be the ambassador to the United Kingdom. And they say, in the London papers are saying that raises questions about Obama's commitment to the special relationship with Britain, number one. And number two, by selecting Sussman, Mr. Sussman, a lawyer who bundled money for Obama. You hear this? He bundled money for Obama to make him president, and now he's being rewarded. They say this is exactly what's done in a banana republic. You pay to play. Blagojevich, pay to play. Okay? So now we have Obama, pay to play. You understand how this works? That's who you have as president right now. Pay to play. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. You're listening to the greatest show on earth, The Savage Nation. But let's go back to the Oscars. And I have to go back to the bottom of the page, my website, because, you know, one picture is worth a thousand words. On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, there's a picture of Meryl Streep and Sophia Loren. And the headline is, Oscars reach senility. They can't even do drag right anymore. Now, the reason I say that is if you look at the schmatas these two wore, let me take you back. Make believe, I don't know how old you are, you know, you're all different ages, but make believe you're a person about, I don't know, 50, 45. Think back to your grandmother's wedding. Think way back to your grandmother's wedding. Think of all of the oldest women there and the dresses they wore. And think of how, like, the mold got to you. The moths were literally flying out of the taffeta. And what it did to you as a kid, you had like a freaky feeling that you were watching a horror show with those dresses. That's what these two wore. Now, Sophia Loren was once drop-dead gorgeous. Meryl Streep, also a beautiful woman in her day. Time and gravity catches up with all of us, including me. But I wouldn't go to an Oscar show wearing my grandmother's dress. This is astounding. This makes us wish for Tony Perkins in Psycho. I mean, Tony Perkins in Psycho had a nicer dress than Sophia Loren and Meryl Streep. That's all I can say. You remember the dress that he wore in Psycho, Tony Perkins in Psycho 1, when he found it up and he came down the transvestite knife job, and he wore the grandmother's dress with the moths flying out of it? That's what these two looked like. And to me, they symbolize the Oscars today. Oscars reach senility. They can't even do drag right anymore. That's why a man can get up a stumble-bum phony like Sean Penn and give a speech in commie, homo, bum, homo, lonely, sons of guns, and they would laugh. Incidentally, you want to see the reality? Third lowest rated Oscars of all time. Third lowest rated Oscars of all time. I turned it on once. I turned it off within 2 minutes. I couldn't believe it. Just like a high school graduation. Now, Mickey Rourke is a far better actor than Sean Penn. We all know that. Mickey Rourke should have won, but he played an actual man rather than a switcher. Because committee. Now, you got to understand something. This is not that important a story. It's far more important to talk about Soros. Is he running the world's economic systems? But since you are a general audience and you're incapable of discussing the collapse of the economy and who actually did it to you and what they're going to do to you next, I'd rather talk about the dresses of Hollywood and the other assorted things to do with the Oscars. How many years have I been telling you that the Oscars were created in the 1930s as a trade show to gin up support for a relatively new industry called the movies? So in other words, if the carding industry has a couple of meetings a year for garbage men of the year, most innovative sanitation man of the year, that's a trade show. We all go to trade shows if you're in a business. This is no different, only because they're larger than life on the screens. You think they're better than you are. But in fact, most of them are worse than you are. Not all, but most of those in Hollywood are worse than you. So they put on a trade show, and now they've gotten so whacked out with their insular natures that they hijacked the entire Oscar ceremony to push homosexual marriage and the homosexual agenda. This is all creative artist agencies doing, in my opinion. CAA, as you well know, if you've studied Hollywood, is run by homosexuals. These were men who were once married, who left their wives to run off with other men. And consequently, they have one obsession. Doesn't matter if the economy's collapsing. Doesn't matter if China's on the march. Doesn't matter if the sea ice is melting. Doesn't matter. All that matters is the homosexual agenda. So if Creative Artists Agency, the most powerful agency in Hollywood, wants a rather tepid movie to win and wants a whacked-up actor to win, it doesn't matter what Mickey Rourke does. At least this is one man's opinion. Now, if you have an opinion, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back. It's Michael Savage.
Savage.
I guess nobody wants to talk about the economy, George Soros. I mean, that's heavy duty. What can you do about it anyway? He just as, you know, they said that the World Series couldn't be fixed, and it turned out later that Steinberg or I don't know who, one of the gangsters said that he fixed the 1918 or 1919 World Series. I guess you could do anything you want if you have enough money. So if you can bundle almost $1 trillion from the Arab Street and Yugoslavia or wherever, and send it to Obama, and he wins, even though he was unknown, you become ambassador to the United Kingdom, even though you started out in the gutter, and the other one can then run the world's economy. That's all. But why do I talk about it? I mean, that's one man's opinion. It's what I would say to a friend on a telephone or in an email to a friend, which is what makes my show unique. I try to, like, express myself the way I would or I do to friends. I have friends. I write them a few emails like this because I can't believe what I'm watching. I cannot believe what I'm watching, that there's so many idiots in the media. I know that they're left-wing. That's okay. They're allowed to be left-wing, but stupid? I didn't think. Well, actually, I take it back. The only person I know who actually went and became a journalist was actually the stupidest one in the crowd. He couldn't even become a garment center tie salesman. He was a rung below them. So he got a degree in journalism. Oh, look, he had emotional problems. He went to journalism school, and for years he wrote for an ethnic newspaper and obituaries. So I do admit that people who went into journalism directly generally were slower than everyone else. It was a step above the developmentally disabled. They went into journalism. So I take it back then in that regard. So we'll talk instead about the lowest rated Oscars in history because the homosexual agenda was too much for the average American, and they turned it off. That's all. San Diego, John, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How's it going, Michael? Have you seen Milk? Did you watch that movie?
Don't put me on the spot. Why don't you just make your point instead of making me the 20 questions? What's your point?
Sean Penn's a great actor. I mean, he is an incredible, incredible
actor.
We
know he's a great actor, but the character of a swishy mayor was not too redeeming as a character. Most Americans didn't go to that movie, John, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I only saw bits and pieces, too, but you just saw The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke. You said that should have won, but I thought you had some negative feelings about that movie. You didn't think it was such a good movie after all. So,
no, but if you're running the characters against each other, I think in addition to the characters that are portrayed, John, a great actor also has to portray a great person, or if not a great person per se, then a person who has some redeeming value. What in the world is the redeeming value of a wrestler who's down on the bottom who fights his way back up? It's sort of the American way, or let's say the way of the world. If you remember great novels of the past, such as The Old Man and the Sea, about one little Cuban fisherman fighting a large fish all alone. Now, why would that be a great characterization? Can you answer that question?
Well, how about this? Isn't there?
No. Answer the question. Don't put me. I'm not a student of yours, nor am I your ex-boyfriend or girlfriend. Explain to me what is great about the Old Man and the Sea, since you're such a literary genius.
Probably it has to do with the characters. I haven't read it, but what about Salinger? What about his books? There was a character that was struggling with all sorts of personal.
Again, you change the discussion like classic liberals who can't argue. You cannot argue. All you can do is change the subject. You know what it is? Your father let you get away with anything. He never said, stop it, answer my question. So I'm going to hang up on you. You didn't have a father, I can't have a discussion with you. You take a character like The Old Man and the Sea, portrayed by Hemingway, and then I think it was acted. I didn't particularly care for that movie 150 years ago. Spencer Tracy did a horrible job, by the way. What a wrong pick that was. I mean, maybe there were Latino actors at the time, Hispanic actors that could have. All right. But the character in The Old Man and the Sea was a Cuban fisherman, goes out alone in a rickety old boat, and wrestles with a fish for days, a large fish, a marlin, whatever, and almost dies and reels it in. I mean, it's sort of the modern-day equivalent of Herman Melville's Inside the Whale, okay, Moby Dick. So you say that's a redeeming story that any ethnic group on Earth can understand. A man struggling alone against the odds against fate. Now, then, of course, you got to add up, is the acting any good to give the guy the best actor? But you have to understand that these awards are, in addition to being awarded for the naked acting itself, meaning the role of being an actor, they're political awards. So virtually every movie that is picked is a left-wing movie. I'll give you another example. I think a year or so ago, the movie Michael Clayton won with, what's his name? He was in Syriana. He's actually a good actor. I don't remember. Does anyone know who I'm talking about? Again, my staff is so quick on the draw, they don't even know I'm on the air. They got their feet up. The sombreros are over their heads. They're eating corn. Guys, do you know who I'm talking about? Who was in Syriana and Michael Clayton? George Clooney. They came back from the siesta. Thank you. So George Clooney, he's actually an actor who I enjoy watching. I think he's a good-looking guy, portrays masculinity well, and he's all in all a believable character actor. But if you watch Michael Clayton, as compelling as that movie was, what is it about? It's about a corrupt company that makes fertilizer that kills people that's trying to cover it up. So again, it's another one of those smoke and mirrors left-wing fantasies that all corporations are evil. So that's why he was picked. It's not that he's a great actor. He's a competent and a good actor. But again, it's a left-wing theme. Now let's come to this Oscar year. Mickey Rourke is in a movie that doesn't have a left-wing theme. It has no right-wing theme. It's a man struggling against himself, which is a universal theme. And then on top of it all, he does a great job. So that's number one. Now compare it with the story about a guy who's gay and is a mayor. What other than sleeping with men is redeeming about Harvey Milk? Nothing. I lived in the city during the Milk years. Nothing. The same crap. The same nothing mayor. There was nothing inspiring. This guy never wrote a word you'll ever remember. I've written many things you'll remember. I've written many things, for example, comparing me to him that make me a titan compared to this nobody. So they make a movie about a nobody because he was gay. And that already suddenly makes it already in the stratosphere. Then you get the guy who wrote it up there crying about when he moved from a Mormon household to San Francisco, how he found himself and how happy he is and blah, 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 blah. And then you got Sean Penn up there sounding like he's whacked out of his mind. Again, the commie homo-loving thing again. Again, like, you know, Smokerino. Smokerino snifferoo.
Savage.
You really brought it.
Thank you, thank you.
You hang in there. You got a lot of ability.
Well, I was wondering if I could get some more work.
All I got is weekends. Isn't that when you sit on other dudes' faces?
And you have a daughter?
Oh, my daughter. She don't like me very much.
You should call her.
What do you want from me?
I'm an old, broken-down piece of meat, and I deserve to be all alone. I just don't want you to hate me.
Two words. Three. Match.
Bring it. You know, with a little luck, this could be my ticket back on top.
A lot of people told me that I'd never wrestle again. The only one who's going to tell me when I'm through doing my thing is you people here.
All right, so again, the character of a wrestler per se is not a noble character. We admit that. It's not a man who invented something or discovered something or led the people in, you know, like Moses, part of the Red Seas. However, it's the story of a man fighting himself, which is a universal theme. We all fight, you want to call it the demons within. I don't like such phraseology. It doesn't work for me. But we all struggle with weaknesses that we may have, or we struggle with proclivities that we may have. That's the human condition. Now, you compare it with a man who gave up struggling with the proclivity he had, meaning he became gay instead of fighting it. And now he tells you that not only is he glad he became gay, but which is illogical, which goes against every religion's teaching from the beginning of time. What you wind up with is Hollywood. They live in their own world. And by the way, homosexuality to them is a religion. You may not understand what I'm saying to you. And you say, well, why are you so obsessed with this subject? Because I see society's meltdown directly related to the homosexualization and the feminization of our society. I look at boys in Marin County, California, as they're raised, and I am shocked to see what the white race has become. You want me to talk about race? Eric Holder said we're cowards, we're moral cowards, and we talked about affirmative action last week and what devastation it has wrought upon white males. Well, you take a look at white boys today in lily white suburbs, largely being raised by mothers, with either absentee fathers or no fathers at all. I swear to God, the boys look like girls. I'm not talking about long hair. I see long-haired boys who are very good-looking and very tough, particularly in other cultures. I mean, I know many fellows from South America or the Central America have ponytails. They don't look feminine to me. They look like they're very powerful, strong men. But I'm talking about something different. I'm talking about if you see a woman in these lily-white suburbs walking with a son and a daughter, you can't distinguish between the two of them. But let's say it's in between the ages of 12 and 15. That's because there's no father around encouraging them to emerge from the cocoon of sameness and develop into what God made them, which is a man, a male. We have a society that's encouraging the boys to become either unisexual or feminine. And it's a big struggle. And if you don't want to talk about it, you don't even understand what's going on in society. And it's why the society is melting down. This is part and parcel with the whole liberal agenda. I don't care what you think about me. I come from another generation. This is how I see the world. And I'm right. Because my generation was a great generation. My generation was a working generation. I come from a super generation who knows what they're talking about and knows what they're doing. I look at these kids and I say, they're going to pay your Social Security when they're 50? They're not even going to make 50. If someone came along and said to them, I'm going to put a ring in your nose and you're going to be my slave, half of them would say, oh, how exciting. Or they would ask you what it's like if it's a lifestyle choice. So let's move on. The movie itself, big deal, a gay mayor, how exciting. Now, if it was about a gay mayor who was also a scientist, or about a gay mayor who was also a great author, or about a gay mayor who was also anything other than being a gay mayor, I would say, all right, fine, there's a redeeming virtue to this guy and a redeeming value to his character that is worth acting. But let's start with the premise itself. Why even make a movie about a man who happens to be a gay mayor? Answer, because it promotes the homosexual agenda just in time for the Oscars, just in time to insult Mormons and other millions of people who said no to homosexual marriage. We have a local newspaper here that is, it was always bad. Well, in the last 10 years, it became a nightmare. And recently, it's gone so downhill that people are shaking their heads. They say, how could this be? How could the San Francisco Chronicle be so obsessed with Proposition 8 that every day all they do is run lists of people who contributed to a campaign that they believed in, as though it's communist China or the Soviet Union where they're publishing hit lists of people who had a political opinion and funded it? What kind of world are we living in? Well, that's what we're living in, the Hollywood gay agenda world. And if you think that they're not powerful, you're mistaken. Creative Artists Agency is behind this movie. Creative Artists Agency, in my opinion, is behind the Oscars. Creative Artists Agency is the group that made this happen. And that's why he won. That's why he won. Now, I don't like Sean Penn's kissing up to dictators like Chavez and Castro. That is true. I don't like what he does on the world stage with such dictators. I think it's a disaster to see a man cavorting with dictators. I don't think anyone could argue with me unless you're Barbara Lee of Oakland, California, or Barack Obama's minions. I suppose they find that charming to go and talk to Chavez and say he's a wonderful man, like Danny Glover, that other one. Why did his voice change over the years? How did Danny Glover go from having a masculine voice to some, like, weirdo, strange, lispy voice in the last couple of years? Should we get into that one? What is that all about? And why are these types so drawn to Chavez, the dictator? That's a secondary story that only a psychiatrist can answer. Look, the bottom line is the Oscars have been a trade show from the beginning, but they used to be entertaining. It was a time that America spent watching glitter and such, and we enjoyed it. And it was an entertaining evening. It was done with charm. It was done with wit. There was good humor. It has devolved into something unwatchable. And that is why we are talking about it, because it was the third, don't forget for 1 minute, you're not going to read this anywhere. It was the third lowest rated Oscar night in history, and it was competing with nothing. And that's because most Americans don't want to watch the homosexual agenda in action. Anthony in Chicago, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. As an independent filmmaker, I'm not a novice to character development and character arc, and I was absolutely floored when Sean Penn beat out Mickey Rourke for the best actor. We all know that Mickey Rourke defended President Bush in the GQ magazine in his war on terror. So I do believe that they had a say in it. But
Okay, that's probably an element. But I think that the element that trumped Mickey Rourke's great acting was the fact that they had to promote a gay character.
Oh, I agree. And if you look at the screenplay, Milk, they put it up against some weak screenplays. It was against Wall-E. It was against Happy-Go-Lucky, Frozen River, nothing. They put it up to win.
By the way, since you're in the film business, this movie Michael Clayton, was that an 08 movie? Do you know the movie I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly the movie that you're talking about. I couldn't stand it, and I didn't like Sirianni either. I thought it was absolutely there was really no resolution. I didn't like it at all.
Well, I disagree with you. I think it was a very well-written screenplay. Unfortunately, the theme was all wrong again. Corporation makes pesticides which kill people instead of promoting a growth of food. I didn't like the theme. It goes back to that old, again, a 1960s theme. Corporations are evil, and they're always scheming to kill people.
Yeah, that seems to sell, though.
Well, I don't think you can sell anything today unless it promotes the homosexual agenda in some positive manner.
Well, I got to tell you something. I love the Oscars. I always get teary-eyed during it. I mean, I don't want to go there. But, yeah, I do love the Oscars, and I love the emotions of it. But I was so devastated for Mickey Rourke because he transformed that character. It was a superb performance that we all can relate to. What is Milk? I mean, I give Sean Penn...
Nothing. A guy... What did Sean Penn do but speak in a lisp? Big deal. That is the easiest acting to do. Which is to put on the lispy voice.
Let me tell you something, Dr. Savage. Mickey Rourke was awesome in The Pope of Greenwich Village. If anybody wants to see...
That was a hell of a movie.
You know, Mickey Rourke really...
Wait a minute. Wait, this is interesting. You should bring it up because both Sean Penn and Mickey Rourke were in the movie, The Pope of Greenwich Village.
Well, you know, were they? It's been a while since I've seen it.
Am I confusing some movies from that time? Maybe I'm mistaken already. Who knows? No, but I thought The Pope of Greenwich Village was a fabulous movie. I happened to watch the rerun of it about 2 months ago. I was awed by it. It's really amazing.
Superb. I couldn't believe. I mean, the man is so talented. And to see him come back.
It doesn't matter whether he wins this fraudulent fake award or not. What matters is that the people loved him in it. I guess this is NASCAR versus the Champagne Circuit, and NASCAR lost.
Well, you know what? Five of the six.
I think it was NASCAR versus the Truffle Circuit, and NASCAR lost. Let's put it to you that way. Do you eat truffles?
No.
No, I don't eat truffles. They're for pigs. Oh, God. All right, let's move on here. I had a good meal over the weekend. I mean, I don't think I'm sitting here grumpy old man me, you know. I didn't want to turn it on 2 minutes and turned it off. Big deal. The other night I went to Aliota's on the Wharf. I love the food. Why did I love it? The food is good, number one, but I'm not promoting the restaurant so much as telling you. I met normal people come up to me one after the other. Mike, we love you. Mike this, Mike that. Mike, I love you. Because it's normal people go to places like this. You know what I'm saying? I like normal people. You'll have to forgive me. And don't assume normal people are all uncreative and people who are wild and crazy are the creative ones. Trust me, it's not either or. So I guess this is more interesting to you than all of the other stories, and I understand that. Human rights versus socialist power. Nationalizing banks, yuck. Child prostitutes and chimps, big deal. Can you play the one again about the simpering screenplay writer with him putting down Mormons again? I'm getting sick of the bashing of Mormons. Let me hear
this
one again.
When I was 13 years old, my beautiful mother and my father moved me from a conservative Mormon home in San Antonio, Texas, to California. And I heard
Wait. That's bad. That's like leaving the Holocaust, wasn't it? Whoa, you really escaped the gas chamber. A loving mother and father who are Mormons? That was a real trial, boy. Boy, you had a tough time. And where did you go? Let's hear the rest of it. You can't pick it up from there? They got ancient equipment. They can't pick it up.
San Antonio, Texas to California. And I heard the story of Harvey Milk. And it gave me hope. It gave me the hope to one day I could live my life openly as who I am. And that maybe even I could fall in love and one day get married. If Harvey had not been taken from us 30 years ago, I think he'd want me to say to all of the gay and lesbian kids out there
please.
Tonight who have been told that they are less than by their churches,
by
the government,
or
by
just
their
keep
families,
acting out.
That you are beautiful,
you'll be as good as you one day.
Creatures of value.
Creatures? Could you finish it now? I mean, why are you cutting it off? Oh. Anyway, in less than the journey of the government, man, you're beautiful, wonderful creatures of value that no matter what anyone tells you, God does love you, and that very soon, I promise you, you will have equal rights federally across this great nation of ours. Why they cut that out of the soundbite, I'll never know. So this whole thing was a political agenda, which is why nobody watched it, except Hollywood and people who are on marijuana or some other drug. So if you want to talk about it, all right. I don't mind talking about it. I'm a movie lover. I got the DVD of The Wrestler about a month ago. Remember, I reviewed it. I said I didn't really like it that much, but I thought the acting was good. So if you're going to rate acting, he was a better actor, that's all, with a more redeeming character. You understand this? Nah, no one understands anything anymore. I need a haircut. I need to see the dentist. Allergy season is here already. That's what Cato the Elder said. The average Roman doesn't care about what the legions are doing in Germania or overseas. The average Roman cared about the pebble in the shoe. So it's like you and me. If you have sinusitis, you care more about the sinus condition you have than you do about Hollywood. If you have an earache, tell me what's more important, Sean Penn or an earache. Let's say you have a cinder in your eye. What's more important to you, getting the cinder out of your eye or Sean Penn? Let's say you have a bunion. What's more important, having the bunion treated by a podiatrist or Sean Penn? Let's say you're constipated. What's more important, relieving your bowels of the constipation or watching the Oscars? And so forth and so on. New York City, WOR, Doug, go ahead, please.
Mike, I want to thank you for being the only media person that's talking about the homosexual agenda at the Oscars in Hollywood.
Doug, let me explain why. They have not yet been punished by the homosexual agenda because they cater to it. I have.
I was screaming at my wife to put my daughter to bed. That they're trying to say that it's okay to be gay, and it's not the end times, Mike, and it's predicted that this kind of...
I'm sorry. You don't teach children. You teach them to be normal. I've done from the beginning of time. That's what you teach them. Now, having said that, if a person becomes gay who happens to be your child, you have to love the child anyway. You don't have to hate the child, but you don't give them an option at 11 years old. They don't know what they are at 11.
Learn behavior, Mike. It's not something.
Wait a minute. Let's have this discussion. Is it genetic or is it learned behavior? There's been a controversy for a long time. For a long time, gays have not wanted to say it's genetic. You know why, don't you?
You may feel that you want to go that way.
No. For many a decade, the gay movement has said it's not genetic because they were afraid that a draconian right-wing government would say they can't control themselves and they would do something to them. Then they switched once they saw the governments had become gay-friendly, and they said it doesn't matter what it is, but it's not genetic, and we have a right to be who we are. We live in a free country and so forth and so on. Okay, but you don't have a right to poison the minds of children. That's my opinion. And you don't have a right to take marriage and hijack it and turn it into something that's a fraud, because homosexual marriage is by definition an oxymoron.
I agree.
But as Goebbels said, if you tell a big lie often enough, it will become the truth. So consequently, they're telling this big lie over and over and over again. Historically, have you known of a man to marry a man in any culture on earth, even the most homosexualized nation on earth in its time, in Greece? Did men marry men with state approval?
It's biologically incorrect.
It's biologically impossible for a man to marry a man. The word marriage means man and woman. It's as simple as that. Now, if a man wants to live with a man and take his pleasure from another man, we do live in a free society, and the state has no right to control the behavior of another individual if it's consensual, an adult, and there are no children involved. I totally agree with that. I'm a sexual libertarian. I've said that 1,000 times. But you have to ask yourself why in the liberal state of California, even in this state, 7 out of 10 blacks voted against gay marriage. 9 out of 10 Chinese voted against gay marriage. Why did that happen, even though they're all super Democrats? Because they understand that family is the brick of civilization. They understand that the family is man and woman. They understand that if you crumble the brick of civilization, what you have is America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the big sound of the Savage Nation. We're talking about the Oscars, the high agenda. The hygienda of the Oscars. We've talked about the hygienda of the Oscars. I think we've done a good job on it. There are so many other political topics, you know. What are we going to do about the economy? I guess we're going to spend trillions of dollars to save the economy. Yeah, that's never worked before. In fact, I'm going to get into this later or another day. This is a long story, but during FDR's time, he spent his way to get out of the Depression. And the liberals would have you believe that the spending is what cured the Depression. But 6 years into this vast spending program of FDR, his own Treasury Secretary, Morgenthau, came out and said, we've spent and spent and spent, and we haven't made a dent, a dent, a dent. The spending has not saved us from the Depression. Now, that's on the record. Apparently, Obama didn't read that when he went to Harvard. Apparently, he got into Harvard on some special skills that I don't know about, but he didn't read what Henry Morgenthau, the Treasury Secretary to FDR, what he actually said about spending, 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 and getting nothing for the money. It did not save America from the Depression. What saved America from the Depression was World War II, which when 24 million men were employed by the U.S. military to go and kill Nazis and Japanese imperialists. That's what saved America, a wartime economy. And mark my words, I said it to you before anybody else. It was picked up by others, and I'm going to say it again, and it's horrible to say. We're going to have a war, and that's what's going to get us out of the Depression. And it's not going to be a cheap war, and it's not going to be a limited war. It's going to be a much bigger war. It's going to be horrible because the whole world's going to go at each other very soon. Once the chips are down, and now that the meat has been withdrawn from the table, and the fat cats are hungry again, and there's no meat for them to devour, they're going to eye each other, and they're going to start circling each other, as they are now. And very soon, one of the others is going to jump on the other's back and rip a piece of meat out of their hide. Just as in the past is telling to the future. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Tommy, homo-loving sons of guns. I did not expect this, but I want it to be very clear that I do know how hard I make it to appreciate me often. But I am touched by the appreciation, and I hoped for it enough that I did want to scribble down so I had the names in case you were commie, homo-loving sons of guns.
When I was 13 years old, my beautiful mother and my father moved me from a conservative Mormon home in San Antonio, Texas, to California, and I heard the story of Harvey Milk, and it gave me hope. It gave me the hope to one day I could live my life openly as who I am, and that maybe even I could fall in love and one day get married. If Harvey had not been taken from us 30 years ago, I think he'd want me to say to all of the gay and lesbian kids out there tonight who have been told that they are less than by their churches or by the government or by their families, that you are beautiful, wonderful creatures of value.
Anyone who's gay and lesbian is a beautiful, wonderful creature just by definition? I mean, it's not a whole spectrum of humanity. Some are gay and beautiful and some are horrible. I mean, what in the world, what kind of brainwashing are you living in? So we've been talking about the Oscars. We've been talking about the fact that they're the lowest rated Oscars in history. We're talking about the fact that by the way, he wasn't a mayor. He was a supervisor, Milk. I've been corrected by someone who corrected me, saying you're making the mayor very uncomfortable, the current mayor, by saying the gay mayor. Because this mayor is not gay. He's just a left-wing liberal whack job. That's why I call him Any Twosome Newsome. This guy, if you said you wanted to marry Francis the Talking Mule, he would approve it with a city stamp of approval. And, of course, that's why we have a devolved, degenerate society that's melted down to almost levels incomprehensible to past generations. It's why the people turned off from the Oscars and why they voted against gay marriage, even in liberal California. And, of course, that's why Creative Artists Agency, in my opinion, needed to ramp up the propaganda. And that's why they did so. And in order to do that, they have to continuously push the big lie. The big lie, as you know, if you tell it often enough, will become the truth. So we've covered that, all right? We did it. The Wrestler should have won as portrayed by Mickey Rourke, not a simpering supervisor who has no redeeming virtues whatsoever, other than the fact that he slept with a man. And I don't understand why that makes him a noble character or any such thing, nor why it's even worthy of a movie. I can't understand it. As I said to you, if it was about a gay man who was a scientist who cured polio, I would have said, wow, that's a great character. Because his sexuality would have nothing to do with the fact that he cured polio. But since this was a gay man who didn't do anything, I have no idea why there was a movie made other than to promote an agenda. That's all. About 2 years ago, we had the same propaganda when a singer, a D-grade singer, got up at the Oscars and said, I'm here with my wife, and it was another woman. And I said, that's, to me, insulting to families and children. And as a result, an agency in Hollywood dropped me as a client 2 days after hiring me because their agenda was not my agenda. Now, we parted, and that was the end of it. I really didn't care. I didn't need them. They didn't need me. I went on with my life, and they went on with their life. But the fact of the matter is, I find it offensive that wherever you turn in the entertainment industry, either they're promoting, the gay agenda, the violence agenda, the drug agenda, the anti-American agenda, the anti-corporation agenda, the anti-family agenda. I have not seen many positive movies lately, and I'm a big movie watcher, but I'm reaching a point of no return. So as I said, well, what's so good about The Wrestler? As I said to you, what's good about it, even though it's not a great movie, but it was really fine acting, is that it's a man versus himself. He is a guy who's constantly doing the wrong thing in life and constantly trying to fight against it, Mickey Rourke. Now, I could go into the whole psychology of the fighter, and I've done this before. I have told you that I've known some boxers in my lifetime, professional boxers. Many of them are extremely complicated people, and many of them are fighting against their own demons in the ring. That's why when they're so evenly matched in a ring, and you can't even tell who's winning, it's because they're really fighting themselves, which is why they love the combat sport. They're fighting themselves in the ring. It's a bigger projection than you can imagine. And spiritualists would understand this. Anyone who understands anything understands this. So boxers are often understood, as are probably mixed martial artists or wrestlers or anyone else who is in a physical combat sport. In essence, they're fighting themselves in the ring. And they're trying to overcome themselves by fighting another man who's almost equally matched to them. It's why they're usually very noble in their private lives, and they would never hit a man smaller than them. It's why they would defend a woman being smacked around by a man, because they don't like someone bigger picking on someone who's smaller. And they're generally, in that regard, kind of noble people, as I found. Fighters are generally great guys. You understand this? No matter their flaws, even if they use speed, even if they use this, even if they went to, so what? That's their problem. It's not my problem. So that's why I say the character is so appealing. But there's nothing appealing about Harvey Milk. All he was a supervisor who slept with men. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about this. We're talking about that. I got some great callers here, and I'm going to take your calls momentarily, but I want to digress to something much more important than Hollywood, which is the connection between George Soros and our Treasury Secretary, the meek, passive, inadequate Timothy Geithner. Now you say, well, why did they appoint Timothy Geithner? When he gave his own speech, the guy was such a loser that markets, tanked. talked about going to Thailand and his mother and father. And he didn't have any solution as for the economic crisis. But now he's the next clown in charge of Treasury. So you say, well, he ran the New York Federal Reserve Bank. Did he? The Chinese-speaking Timothy Geithner is an associate of none other than Henry Hank Kissinger. Hank Kissinger. Now, Geithner used to work for Kissinger Associates. You don't know about that. It also turns out that Geithner's father, Peter F. Geithner, serves on the board with Kissinger of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations. Now, here's a man who didn't even pay his own taxes. This comes to us from Mike Kincaid from Accuracy and Media, and I'll go on. Geithner is a front man, in my opinion, for powerful special interests. Let's look no further than the nature of a group called the Group of 30, which is an affiliation which appears at the bottom of his biography right after his Council on Foreign Relations membership. And you'll learn that the former president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank, Timothy Geithner, our current Treasury Secretary, is an associate of the governor of the Chinese Central Bank. Did you hear that? An associate of the governor of the Chinese Central Bank. Through this mysterious organization of bankers and other top current and former officials from various countries. You'll also notice that other Obama nominees and associates are members, including Paul Volcker and Lawrence Summers. You'll also learn that this organization has been funded by some of the same financial institutions getting federal bailout money, meaning your money. These include American International Group, AIG, which now wants more money, Goldman Sachs, which was, of course, the provider of many Treasury secretaries, and Citigroup, among others. They're all in trouble. They're all getting money from you, and they want more money from you because you can't stop Obama from giving it to them because you've lost control of your government to this fixer from Chicago. Right? Now, who is the Group of 30? The entire list of contributors and supporters of the Group of 30 is very impressive. You're going to find not only U.S. financial institutions getting bailout money, but central banks around the world getting money from you, and Arab financial interests getting money from you. In addition, you'll also find private financial interests, including, and here it is, here comes the cherry on the cake, the hedge fund money operator and Obama contributor, George Soros. So in other words, a small group of very powerful bankers are running the world's economy, and they've run it off the rails, and they want you now to bail them out with more money. And they're telling you they know how to fix it after they broke it. I just thought I would share with you. Houston, Texas. Don, welcome to the Savage Nation.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, Dr. Savage. Thank you for your time.
Yes, sir.
I am a retained executive search consultant. We used to be called headhunters, now we're called that. I work exclusively in the oil and gas industry.
Yes, sir.
And only place C-level executives here in Houston. I generally work with people starting at a $2 million base salary and up.
Right.
So I called to talk to you a little bit about where the corruption starts, and I think you'll be amazed.
Well, wait. Before you say another word, I want to take a – I see I'm a guy who takes chances verbally. My guess is that the executive compensation committees are getting kickbacks from the executives that they consult with.
I have no proof of that, but the system is not built in a way that's impossible.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. It's the same way you're asking why people ask, why hasn't the SEC cracked down on Madoff and the other gangsters of Wall Street? The answer is because they're one and the same. The SEC is Madoff and the other gangsters.
Correct. So
okay.
Liberalism is a mental disorder. You wait till you get a load of this. The corruption starts so deep. So part of my responsibility is to help these executives negotiate their employment contracts. But it gets even better. Their employment contracts aren't even called employment contracts. They're called change of control agreements.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it means that whether they're there for 17 days or 17 years, whether they're fired, whether the company makes money or loses money while they're there, the minute control changes, meaning they're replaced by another C-level executive. Or they could have been fired, they could have been laid off, the company could have dissolved. They are owed the amount of money that it says they get in bonus.
Wow, what a great deal. So how does this happen?
Well, it's just like, you know, it's how did the first Major League Baseball player make $200 million? It's somebody proves that the market will support it. Somebody sets the precedent, and then everyone else starts demanding it after that.
What I love is we hear that if we limit CEO salaries in banks, that we're going to lose them to foreign banks. There are no jobs for them. I used to hear the same crap with regard to academic liars, professors, when they jack their salaries up to superstar level and say, well, we have to be competitive or else they'll go to private industry. Nobody was waiting for these academic hacks in private industry. This is all these people have ever done and could ever do. It's the same with these CEOs. What do you mean? Where are they going to go and get a job now, in China?
Yeah, and everything's based off the dollar. I mean, even I find myself being a de facto part of it because I make a percentage of their base rate of compensation.
Yeah, but don't feel bad. That's what you do for a living, and you're supposed to be their advocate, and you are, and you're a good advocate. But this has all got to change. Don't you agree, Don?
I do, because even at the very base level, it's all driven by not what your worth is, but how much you can get.
Don, thank you for the call. I got pains in my chest from that call. New Hampshire, Francis, you're next up. Topic, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to change subjects a little bit and talk about the tennis tournament in the country of Dubai.
I remember it's an outrage, and the world doesn't care because it's only another Jew being insulted.
My question is, obviously, the first black president, or half-black president, if you will, obviously, he's proven that he can bait and switch us with his deception and hypocrisy. How come he did not take a stand on this? Has this been
explain to the people what you're talking about, or I'll do it. If I can quickly,
well,
there was a worldwide tennis tournament in Dubai, and they banned an Israeli athlete from performing, a female tennis star. To the credit of other female superstars in tennis, they were outraged and they said this shouldn't happen. But what you're saying is the double talking fraud. Obama said nothing about it, even though he's supposed to be down with minorities.
Nothing. And here you have the Williams sisters, which are advocates, strong advocates for tennis and the African American population. And since they were the basically the spokesman and the highlights of the tournament, an otherwise dull tournament, they elected to take the check and run, which I thought was had this been at the
U.S.
Well,
here's how I see it. What do you expect from Dubai? They're a bunch of anti-Semitic Arab SOBs. This is why I opposed the Dubai ports deal, because I knew they'd stab us in the back at the first opportunity. Was I right or wrong?
You are absolutely correct.
I mean, I'm going to trust a bunch of Arab sheiks in Dubai to manage the port security in America because George Bush said so, that I should trust them?
Obama should have made a comment, and that's my big point.
What more do you need to know than the bag lady herself, former Secretary of Hate, Madeleine Albright, was basically prostituting for Dubai? What more do you need to know than Bob Dole, a man who once had great credentials and was a genuine American hero, prostituted himself for 30 pieces of silver, and also became a prostitute for Dubai? When there's enough money at stake, my friends, anything can happen. If they build gas chambers in Dubai, I don't think you'd hear any outrage, as long as the prostitutes of the type I just mentioned were given their 30 pieces of silver, Francis.
I appreciate your time, Dr. Savage.
Thank you. See, I still have, I'm like the last angry man of radio. And so I continue to be the last angry man of radio. That's all. This is what the last angry man sounds like. But that's the nature of the game. Fortunately, I've reached an age where I am entitled to my opinion. And I've reached a status in the radio business where I'm entitled to my opinion. Whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that I'm on the radio, and I have been for 15 years. And that the audience, more of you like me than don't like me. That's all that matters. And I know if some of you are new to this, you're shocked because you've never heard anything like this. This is supposed to sound like Tom Brokaw. This is Tom Brokaw in love with his own voice, broadcasting from a very important building in a very important city with a very important man about very important topics. Well, I'm not that kind of broadcaster. So when you listen to me, you say, what is this? What am I listening to here? You're listening to reality. This is Reality Radio with Michael Savage, better known as the Savage Nation. Now, coming up after this important break is a very, very important discourse I'm about to give you on where Obama could lead us if he's not stopped. If Obama is not stopped, what you have to do is look back in history to see where it goes. And there are various types of socialism. We do not know where the wheel ends. We have no idea which type of socialism will emerge. Some are benign forms of socialism, as in England, and some are rather extreme, as in Germany of the 1930s or in Italy of the 1930s. Round and round it goes. Where Obama stops, only the people knows.
Savage.
Now, Mussolini began his career as a revolutionary socialist. You may not even know who he was. He was the dictator of Italy at the same time that Hitler was the dictator of Germany, at the same time as Stalin was. And he was the editor of a paper, Mussolini, a newspaper. And he moved on and on. And there was tremendous revolution going on in Italy at the time. The government was weak and indecisive, and I should say corrupt. And in Italy, there was a communist upheaval that seemed possible to many. And Mussolini felt much the same patriotic discomfort as Hitler did. And he began to organize a national movement of black shirts, the fascisti. They wanted firm government control, not only of the people, but of financial and business controls. Now, Obama has done the latter, but not the former. Thus far, Obama, in less than a month, has achieved what it took these people 10 years to do. Firm government control of financial and business. But he's not yet induced a firm government control of the masses. Not yet. And who supported Mussolini in the beginning? Tremendous support from the big industrialists and financiers supported Mussolini because they were afraid of the Red Revolutionaries in expropriating their wealth. And they thought that after Mussolini served his purpose as a strikebreaker, they would be able to control him. Sound familiar? They feared the Reds too much and the Mussoliniites too little. His theory of the corporate state implied a strong control of private economics. This is exactly what we're seeing right now. And so his movement kept going on and on and on. And in October of 1922, the March Upon Rome occurred. That was a seizure of power by the fascist organization. And thereafter, Mussolini's rise was rapid and uninterrupted. In the beginning, the Mussolini dictatorship, by the way, was not anti-Semitic at all. That was the difference between the Italian fascists and the German fascists. The Nazis were diehard racists, primarily against the Jews. They used the Jews as a scapegoat. And consequently, the Jews suffered terribly as a result of this. And I should define again the difference between the fascist revolution in Italy and the fascist revolution in Germany was distinctly different in that regard. There was no racism in the fascists of Italy initially, but Hitler imposed it upon Mussolini later on. He made him do it. Those of you who know anything about the history of fascism in Italy know exactly what I'm talking about. But you see, Germany was broken after World War I with tremendous debt payments from the League of Nations. Not only did Germany lose the war, but Germany had to be kept down. That's what the United Nations of the time said. Germany had to be kept down. The League of Nations said, keep them down. And so they tried to break Germany even further, and they had the problems that I've described before of runaway inflation and whatnot. And in the midst of all of this, a new voice became audible amongst the clatter. It was an angry voice. It was an angry, strident voice, but it said what millions of crazed, distraught Germans had been feeling, that Germany had been cheated and betrayed. Germany had been cheated and betrayed, and that Germany need to have the pride that it once had occupied before 1914 restored. And this voice said that Germany had not been defeated on the battlefield. He said that Germany had been betrayed from within. She had been betrayed in particular by her intellectuals, by the Communist International, by the academics, and by the Jews. And then he called about the nation to return to its racial roots, to the strenuous warrior life of the ancient Aryan Teuton. And this was the voice of the Austrian painter Adolf Hitler. And it had a horrible appeal to the vast and growing mobs of adolescents who had no prospects in life. They were unemployed. And so he appealed to the unemployed, and they developed an organization that spread. And that organization was a political party called the National Socialists, emphasis on the word socialist. Many of you don't understand that Hitler was a socialist. National Socialism, Nazism, was a socialist movement. Many of you are in denial about that. And so here are two extremes of fascist movements, Germany, Italy. What does it have to do with the confusion you're living through now in America? Everything. What you don't understand is that you're living through a revolutionary period in American history. Many of you are focused rightly on this, on the bailout, on the mortgage, because you're so wrapped up in a day-to-day, you don't know what to do. But there's no one out there in the media other than me to explain it in the context of what it is, because they don't have the ability, the background, the education that I do. And I'm not condemning them. I'm not boasting. Don't take me wrong. Please don't take this as a boast. They don't have the global capacity to tell you what's going on. Some of them who have college, high school educations, who are struggling hard, say the word socialism and socialist. Intuitively, they're right, but that's as far as they can go because they don't understand any more about it. That's okay. They can learn. Doesn't mean they're stupid. They just don't have the education to understand the context of what they're saying, socialist, about Obama. I do. And so I'm helping you with this. As the most highly educated man in the American electronic media, I am helping you understand that you're living through a revolutionary period and that we have a revolutionary socialist administration, Barack Hussein Obama. And he is a bold and vigorous leader. Make no mistake about it. He's a very brilliant divide-and-conquer leader. And he knows exactly how to manipulate you and everyone else in this country. And what he's trying to do now, he has already achieved control over the private economics of this country. In less than a month, it's been turned over to him. That's why there was a mini-revolt on the floor of the Chicago. Those guys understand what he's doing. That's why the market's in decline. The pure unadulterated capitalists on the floors of these exchanges understand that there is a socialist running the government right now. They got it. They may not say it, but intuitively they know it. The only thing he's not yet done is get total control over the people. He will have firm government control over the masses if you don't stop him. This community organizer from Chicago, Barack Hussein Obama, has achieved total control over the finances of America and almost total control over the industries of America, but he's not yet achieved what Hitler and Mussolini did, which took them 10 years, which is a complete and total control of the masses. It was an executive order called the Department of Urban Whatever. And everyone says, what do you mean he created an executive order? Another one? What did he do now? What do you mean he created a new executive order? Yes, the White House Office of Urban Affairs. And if you go on the White House press release, it's rather innocuous. Establishing the White House Office of Urban Affairs by authority vested in me as president, I hereby become a dictator, and I make another bill, another law, and I'm going to create another department whose function is to provide leadership, coordinate development of the policy agenda for urban America, across all executive departments and agencies. What is it for? Coordinating the Department of Treasury, Department of Justice, Department of Commerce, Department of Labor, Health and Human Services, Department of Transportation, Energy, Education, Protection, EPA. And the office is now going to be a centralized power center for all of these departments in urban areas. Well, that would mean that he has military powers, police powers, from the federal level in the cities. That's what this really means. As sure as I'm sitting here, this executive order establishing the White House Office of Urban Affairs is another power grab to impose a federal police power over the cities. That's what I see going on here. Now, I'll continue with this paranoid fantasy because that's what many of you think it is, because you're living in a delusion that we have a nice guy running America surrounded by nice people. You want to live in that delusion? Wait until you see that I'm right. Wait until you get bitten by the wild animal inside your house. Wait until you see the thousands of green-shirted fascists coming to a neighborhood near you on the government payroll to knock on your door and just do simple surveys about energy use, about utilities that are overutilization of utilities, about how many rooms are not occupied in your house or dwelling. You wait and see if this doesn't happen, if this man is not stopped. I believe that this man is on that road. I believe Obama is on that road of absolute and total power. And there's a couple of reasons for it. One, he's a revolutionary socialist. Two, no one has ever said no to him in his entire life. He has been catered to from the time he was a child in Hawaii. And no one ever said no. They greased the skids for him every step of the way. Grandmother sacrificed so he can go to Punahou on a scholarship. Then he went to Harvard on a scholarship. Then he was a bright guy, and because of his racial situation, let's be clear, he was advanced rapidly. As a result of all of these things, no one ever said no to him. Now he's a community organizer. Again, his rise was unbelievable, phenomenal. How did his rise occur so fast? Who was behind him? Well, Rezko, remember, that came up. That was killed pretty quickly. There's a lot of money behind him, a lot of power behind him. So now it's beyond his wildest dream. You saw him a month ago when he first got an Air Force One. He looked like, what am I doing here? He couldn't believe it. He looked out of place as he got off and on Air Force One. He looked like he broke in, like he just broke in by accident. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this. Because in his wildest dreams, he never thought this would happen so fast. So as Lord Acton taught you, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. My friends, if you don't take a stand against this emerging fascist administration, you mark my words, you will lose all of your freedoms in your lifetime faster than you can say Barack Obama.
Savage.
Things are changing, as you well know. Nothing remains static. Delta is the symbol of change, and the society changes, as you would expect, through time. Newspapers, obviously, are dying. You know, old-line television shows are dying. Portions of radio have died off, such as music. People can download it. Talk radio is booming because you can't get it anywhere else. But other things are symbols of this, you know, dinosaur called our society and how it's changing. Some change is good, some change is bad, some change is of no significance whatsoever. But one of the other changes that we've noted today on the Savage Nation is the death of the Oscars. They have ceased to have any cultural or social relevance, mainly because they've ceased to entertain. And consequently, we have nothing but propaganda all around the clock, day and night, whether it be the selection of a movie about a homosexual city supervisor who distinguished himself in no other way other than sleeping with men, as performed by an actor who can never finish an entire sentence unless he is directed very carefully and the script is on a teleprompter in front of him. Documentaries, again, that extol the virtues of God knows what, anything except borders, language, culture, and the virtue of work. Any documentary that shows the travails of a prostitute or of a junkie or of an anti-American street worker, those usually win the awards, and that's why people stopped listening, watching them. It's just, we're talking about the Oscars, and there's no better picture of this decline and fall of the Oscars than the schmatas worn by Meryl Streep and Sophia Loren, which I dug up for you today on the internet. I don't know where I found them. They were really great. I happen to like looking at gowns. I've always been interested in costumes, and to me, a gown is a costume. In fact, remember years ago, I shocked people when I went to the museum here and reported on it was a whole show about costumes, and all that, and women were shocked that I know anything about clothing and costuming. But if you look at the dresses of the Oscars, you see it's quite a social statement. And what you see in looking at the pictures of Meryl Streep and Sophia Loren, these are ones very devastatingly beautiful women. All right, people get older. They lose their shape. It happens to everyone. Time and gravity, there's nothing to say about that. You can't control it. There's only so much Botox and surgery can do for you. But to wear schmatas like this is astounding. It's an astounding statement about bad taste. Oh, the New York Daily News. I have it on the bottom of michaelsavage.com. It's a must read. And my headline is my own. It says, Oscars reach senility. They can't even do drag right anymore. I think it's a clever title to get your attention. I was stunned when I saw her schlep out with her daughter last night, Meryl Streep. The few minutes I watched it, my mouth fell open. I said, this cannot be the Meryl Streep of yesteryear. I don't like her politics. She doesn't like mine, I'm sure. But that's irrelevant. A person's acting can transcend their politics. I overlook their acting. I mean, their politics often, if I enjoy the entertainment. But at this point, the schmaltz is not even entertaining anymore. And the outfits that they wore. And as I said to you early, you have to go back to your grandmother's time. Do you remember when you were a little child? But you have to be older to understand this, because already by the 80s, grandmothers didn't even dress like this anymore. I guess you have to be over 50 to understand this, what I'm about to say. Think back to your poor deceased grandmother who you love. Now think back to a wedding or a social event, and when she walked out in her dress, and you were maybe a wee lad, and you looked at this moth-ridden dress. That's what Sophia Loren and Sophia Loren and Meryl Streep looked like last night. So why am I going on and on about bad dresses? Because to me, it symbolizes what's happened to this once entertaining ceremony called the Oscar ceremony. I'll put it in another context for those of you who didn't have family. Remember the movie Psycho with Alan Bates? Remember when he put on the moth-ridden dress from his grandmother's trunk in the attic and then went on a knifing spree? That's the kind of dress these women were wearing. And even young women, I mean, good-looking women with great bodies were wearing her. What's going on here, I asked myself. Even the dresses don't make sense to me. Nothing looked right. And I won't go into the men's costumes because nobody dressed right except Mickey Rourke. He didn't wear a tuxedo. At least he wore something, you know, kind of flamboyant, to use a very 50s Fire Islandish term. At least he dressed like an entertainer trying to be, you know, different and entertaining. He looked interesting. You know. But that's it. How come Soros' hedge fund went up 8% last year while all of the hedge funds seem to have crashed? How come Soros was amongst the group that handpicked this jerk to run Treasury? How come Obama has insulted the United Kingdom by picking a lawyer fundraiser from Chicago named Sussman? Well, it could be because Sussman, the fundraiser lawyer from Chicago, bundled hundreds of millions of dollars for Obama to make him president. Now you say, I didn't read that in my paper. Why are you making that up? Well, I read it in the London Telegraph. And if you look at the article on michaelsavage.com, you'll see what I'm talking about. And they're calling America now a banana republic. They're saying that pay for play, in you raise a certain amount of money and you get an appointment to an ambassadorship is something you'd expect from Uruguay or Paraguay, but not from America. But what you don't know is America has become little more than Uruguay and Paraguay under Obama, to many fair-minded social analysts and commentators such as myself. Because when you take a guy like Sussman, who I don't know, I'm sure he's a wonderful, superb lawyer from Chicago, but you have to ask yourself, why did he bundle hundreds of millions of dollars for Obama? And does that have anything to do with him being made ambassador to England so he could play in the castles of England? Could you play There's No England Anymore as I collect my thoughts? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com.
All the stories.
Here it is. I love this song.
Of kings and days of old.
But anyway, Sussman's going to enjoy all of the English, the curious English, whatever's left of the white race in England. Yeah, he's going to enjoy it. Well, but there's still some nice things over there. They got nice collections of cutlery and whatever. They got Sheffield silver. Savile Row is still there. I mean, they still got nice cars that don't run, made in China. Harry in Los Angeles, KGIL, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think England's been a nation of shopkeepers many, many years ago. They changed. And George Soros, I think he's the symbol of the metamorphosis between the times are changing. The government is the corporation. In a free market enterprise world, I don't care if a CEO makes $80 million, $90 million like Tiger Woods did in 2005, 2006. The difference between Tiger Woods and the CEOs is Tiger Woods wins. Nicholson, you know, Kobe Bryant. All
but these Harry, guys. I don't argue with that. I don't care if a CEO makes $80 million if the company is making money. What I object to is a CEO making $80 million when the company went bankrupt. You'd agree with me on that.
I absolutely agree. And in a free market.
In other words, why reward failure is the question. They should fail with the failing company. They shouldn't be making money if the company loses money. I mean, that's what the people are screaming about. Nobody argued about capitalism when they were making money. They said, all right, so they're making $100 million. They deserve it. They made the company $10 billion. But now you see these gangsters gutted the company, sold the companies out, burned out the company, and they're making 50, 40, 30, whatever. They're criminals. They should be in jail. Their assets seized. and their grandmother's income seized.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Michael Savage. Here's what I've been talking about today. Obama and the deficit. Hillary and China. And the Oscars. Obama and the deficit? He's just added the largest charge to the federal credit card in American history. And yet the charlatan says he plans to cut the deficit in half. Now, we know he's lying because it's impossible. But that doesn't stop the empty skirts in the media from saying, Obama to cut deficit in half by the end of his term in the year 3020. Hillary and China. Why is Hillary ignoring China's history of violence, torture, organ trading, and other human rights abuses as she asks, shall I say, begs them to continue buying our T-bills? Has Hillary basically said that she doesn't care who we deal with as long as they're willing to give us money? Well, sure, they would do a deal with the devil. Why not? The Oscars. The Oscars. Oh, so retro. Oh, so yesterday. Were you disgusted by the shameless pandering to the homosexual mafia at the Oscars last night? Yick. Did you see any movie at the ceremony last night that actually deserved the award that it won? Yick. Well, something I talked about recently was tax cheats in charge of the Treasury, people with no experience running departments. Obama's choices for his cabinets creates more questions than answers. I guess that's to be expected from our two-green president. Now, there's a problem with another appointment. Would you believe a person charged with mishandling of highly classified documents on a spy satellite advisory board? Ronald Kessler with Newsmax is here to talk about it. Ronald, what's going on there?
Well, this was John Deutsch, the former CIA director, who took it upon himself to download some 113,000 top secret CIA files onto his home computers. And he would give out his email addresses, so it would have been easy for the KGB or his successor to get in there, and he was caught, and he did agree to plead guilty to a misdemeanor of misuse of classified information, but Bill Clinton, along with Mark Rich and others, pardoned him just as Bill Clinton was leaving office. So who does he end up being appointed to by Barack Obama to the Satellite Advisory Board of the Director of National Intelligence? Now, what an incredible example to set for the intelligence community that you can misuse your position and abuse your trust that much and still be appointed to a very prestigious and important position.
What is Obama thinking with these appointments?
Well, I think there's a pattern here. It seems that Obama was pretty much aware of the tax problems of his recent nominees, but decided to go ahead anyway, tough it out. The press is on his side. Why not take a chance? And that seems to be the same kind of hubris that you see here with the appointment of John Deutsch. So what if he was about to plead guilty to a charge of misusing information? We can do whatever we want.
How did Deutsch get in this position for this board? Why would they want this guy?
I guess he knew the new director of national intelligence, and he decided to appoint him. And so what if he had a background like that? On top of the misuse of classified information, John Deutsch is the guy who imposed this risk-averse atmosphere on the CIA to the point where CIA officers were afraid to recruit anybody because John Dory said, well, if you recruit someone who has a so-called human rights violation, meaning, well, maybe he murdered a few people, oh, you have to get special permission, you have to go up to special levels. Well, of course, that just sent the message that you better not take a risk in recruiting someone who actually might know something about al-Qaeda. Well, who else would know about al-Qaeda and terrorists besides someone who's murdered a few people? Incredible. So that was one of the reasons that we missed 9/11, this very risk-averse atmosphere where the CIA basically retired in place.
What kind of effect on the CIA's morale are these pics having?
I am hearing that people are pretty bewildered, and morale is suffering not only because of that appointment, but also these statements by Obama and by the new CIA director, Leon Panetta, that they are going to insist that the CIA tell the truth to the president rather than what the president wants to hear. You know, it's obviously the CIA was wrong about Iraq, but there are so many examples where the CIA did tell Bush things that he didn't want to hear. And, for example, that Iran was not really building a nuclear weapon. So the CIA overall is very independent, and that certainly has not helped morale either.
Well, what do you see happening here?
You know, unless the press jumps on it and they're in love with Obama and seems unlikely, nothing's going to happen. You know, John Deutsch is going to continue. And the latest story I have on Newsmax says that Michelle Obama has been taking freebies from the fashion industry, again, with total impunity. You know, Nancy Reagan did the same thing, and the press beat up on her for years. But yet Michelle Obama got her inauguration gown, which is worth $6,000, jewelry worth $17,000, lots of other items, dresses, et cetera, from designers who gave them free of charge. And Michelle would say, well, I'm going to donate it to the Smithsonian or whatever. That has nothing to do with it. I interviewed a top tax accountant who said, you still have to declare it for income tax purposes. You still have to disclose it under the Government and Ethics Act, and that there are ethical questions involving the wife of the president getting these benefits from the fashion industry. So we'll see if the press picks up on that.
Do you think the love affair between Obama and the media will ever end?
I do see some you know, hints that the press is starting to get a little tougher, is asking tougher questions in the briefings. So I think the press, being the press, you know, wanting to write something, will start becoming more critical as time goes on.
Thanks, Ronald Kessler. Let's hope that the media will stop fawning over our new president before it's all too late. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Our pressing on those issues can't interfere with the global economic crisis, the global climate change crisis, and the security crises.
At the end of Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State goodwill tour of Asia, she stopped in at her buddies at the Communist Nation of China and continually made reference to how the countries of China and the United States need to work together in the future and how our future are intertwined. With all this goodwill that Mrs. Clinton was showing, she apparently didn't have the time to talk about China's horrendous human rights record. Well, that's something she used to talk about incessantly as a first lady under Bill Clinton. But that was then, this is now. Well, what's really changed in the last decade? Why is it that when Clinton was asked about human rights when in China this time, she said that pressing these issues, quote, can interfere with the global economic crisis and the global climate change crisis? Well, I'm not shocked that she would put global warming ahead of some poor Chinese that may be put in prison for believing in democracy. With the amount of rhetorical capital that the liberals have been investing into the sham called global warming, it really is not surprising that they're willing to spend the civil rights of a billion Chinese people in order to keep their global warming scam going. What was shocking to me was Hillary Clinton's final words to the Chinese before she left the country. She urged the communist Chinese to keep buying American debt, and it was that request that really got me thinking. Global warming is something that everyone, including the Chinese, can pay lip service to, but it really doesn't cost a dime to pay lip service. Well, not really a dime. When she was asking the Chinese communists to buy American debt, she was essentially asking them to fund the socialist takeover that she and Barack Obama are planning in the United States. They are comfortable to not talk about China's human rights abuses in exchange for the Chinese to assist with the billions of dollars of spending and the trillions of dollars of debt that the United States is going to incur during the soft socialist revolution. Is there a kidney in their future? So if you're wondering what trumps a liberal sense of human rights, it is socialist government, period. Obama is promising to both balance the budget and cut back on military spending, all this while increasing troops in Afghanistan. Yet no one in the media seems to be asking him how he's going to do this magic trick. The midstream media needs to wake up and start asking the real questions instead of swooning over Obama's one-liners and sound bites. Joining us now to report on this budget plan is KT McFarland with ktmcfarland.com.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you again. And I think that it's going to be just amazing. Tomorrow night, Barack Obama is going to get on television. He's going to tell the American people that he's got this massive expenditures, this major new spending program, and he's somehow going to miraculously balance the budget by the year 2013. He's going to say part of it is because he'll cut or he'll increase taxes by letting the Bush tax cuts expire. But he's also going to say he's going to save money on the military when he brings troops back from Iraq. Well, that's just loony, frankly. It's going to be impossible for Barack Obama to cut military spending as long as he's in Afghanistan for a couple of reasons. One, the Marine and the Army units are seriously depleted after 5 years of fighting in Iraq. They will come home, but most of their units need new equipment. They need retooling, repairing, equipment needs replacing. And that is very expensive, and it requires additional expenditures. You don't save money when you retool a military unit. It costs you money. Number two, Obama and his entire national security team are on record calling for additional 100,000 troops in the Army and in the Marines. So if he's spending at a certain level to have what he has now, to increase it by 100,000 troops means not just 100,000 troops, but their training, their new equipment, their logistics. All of that is, again, expensive and requires additional expenditures. Third, as we ramp up and surge in Afghanistan, which Obama announced just this week, he's going to send an additional 17,000 troops for a spring offensive in Afghanistan. You've got to expect, sadly, that there will be increased casualties. That's exactly what happened when we surged in Iraq. Initially, there were much higher casualties. In the end, it was great because there are almost no casualties now. But initially, it's very expensive, and it's tragic. But at the same time, this adds additional expenses, not something Barack Obama is going to be able to cut back on. He's certainly not going to want to cut back aid to military medical aid or repair or any kind of the rehabilitation. Now, the next thing is that those are all direct troop costs. There will be other spending increases that the Obama administration is going to have to do in Afghanistan to deal with soft power. For example, if we push for a Sunni awakening type effort with the Afghan tribes like we did with the Sunni tribes, well, that means additional money and outlays to them. General Petraeus succeeded in part in Iraq because he pulled the Sunni sheikhs over to our side, who had been our enemies, and all of a sudden they became our friends, in part because he was able to fund their programs and to their own tribes. The sheikhs in Iraq were already turning against al-Qaeda, fair enough. But the thing that really helped make up their minds was when Petraeus and the American military came in and offered them expenditures and allowed them to equip and pay for their own militias. You know, in the Middle East, Michael, money talks. If Barack Obama plans to do the same sort of thing in Afghanistan, it's going to cost him more, not less money. The next thing is if we look at Afghanistan, the supply routes that we've been supplying our forces and NATO forces in Afghanistan through Pakistan, going over through the mountain regions and going by ground. That's now being shut off. Al-Qaeda, operating in those northwest tribal regions, has increasingly in the last two months, really, has attacked those convoys and has made it very difficult for us to get supplies through that route. Now, we are looking for alternative supply routes now. We're hoping to bring in supplies via Russia and maybe the stands. And if we do, and I think in the end we will be able to do it, it's going to cost us money. We're going to have to pay for that privilege. That's not free. And it'll also be equipment that moves by air and not by ground, which, again, is more expensive. Another thing that just is amazing is Now, Obama apparently is going to say that part of the way he's going to save money on the defense plan is he's going to cancel expensive weapons programs. Well, granted, that will save some money. Weapon systems are not nearly as expensive as personnel costs in the military, but you could save some billions. Not a lot, but you could save stuff. But what do you do when you cut those programs out? Guess what? Those companies mean they're going to have to lay off a lot of workers who had been building that military equipment. So while he cuts defense spending, he's cutting American jobs, putting more people out of work. Normally, historically, we have gone through periods where we've ramped up and spent more money on defense during war, cut back not when we've been at peace. And when we cut back defense spending, what we usually do is stretch out procurement. So in other words, instead of building an airplane, a run of an airplane where you build 100 airplanes and you take 5-7 years to do it, you're going to stretch it out, so you're going to take 10 years to do it. So you spend a little bit less each year, but and maybe you have a few less airplanes, but in the end you still make the airplanes. Now Obama may cut that, but what he can't do is what we normally also do when we cut defense spending, which is cut back on training and maintenance. What we found when I entered in with President Reagan in the Reagan administration is during the Carter administration, the Carter had cut back defense spending, we found that we would have to have 2 airplanes, one on the ground and one in the air, because we were using that second one on the ground to cannibalize it for spare parts. We had ships that couldn't sail because they didn't have the fuel oil to sail. We had pilots that weren't qualified to fly because they weren't getting their training. That's how you save money. But you can't do any of those things when you're in the middle of a combat zone. Now, maybe what Obama's trying to signal is that he could cut back on defense spending, but only if he gets out of Afghanistan. And if he does, he's already politically just staked his whole reputation on Afghanistan as the good war. Iraq was Bush's war. Iraq was the war we shouldn't have fought, but Afghanistan is the good war. Well, if Obama wants to fight that war, it's going to cost a lot of money. And if he doesn't want to fight that war, well, he's going to have a lot of political problems, in addition to a whole lot of other problems. So I think that tomorrow night when we listen to him talk about, you know, blue smoke and mirrors, as we say in the Pentagon, where he's going to say, here's how I'm going to cut defense spending, and it's not going to hurt anybody, and it's not going to hurt our war effort, don't believe it, because it's just not true. Never has been, never will be. So, Michael, I'm delighted you're reporting on this topic.
Thanks, KT. We have to keep getting these stories out. Maybe the media will wake up to the facts and start asking these questions soon. I'll be right back.
Savage.
On the right side of my website, michaelsavage.com, is a much more important story. And the question is Soros running the world's economic systems? Is he the mastermind who created Obama and installed him into power? The question that I raised is, how is the Soros Fund doing these days? And I found the answer. The answer is simple. Billionaire investor and money changer in the temple of reality, George Soros, has a hedge fund. His hedge fund made 8% in 2008, while most others crashed. Now, I'm only going to ask a logical question, not because I doubt Mr. Soros' integrity. We know he's a fine man. We know he's a wonderful man. His family fled the Nazis, and the rest is history. I mean, it's a Horatio Alger story. What a wonderful human being he is, how much he's done for making certain that marijuana is not criminalized and spreading other such wonders around the planet. Collapsing economies across Eastern Europe, steaming up Russia, a wonderful human being, almost broke the Bank of England, steamed up anti-Semitism in the world by almost breaking the Malaysian currency, a super human being. So I'm going to only ask a simple question. We were told during the Madoff scandal, which is still ongoing, even though he's living in his penthouse, you know, if you stole a library book, the tax squad would come in and you'd be in jail. But Madoff allegedly stole $50 billion. He's still in his penthouse. Why? Say rotten, stinking, smelly judges in the SEC. Say a rotten system that stinks from the top to the bottom. So we were told during the Madoff scandal, weren't we, that if a man is reporting earnings while all others are reporting losses, you have to ask yourself, is it too good to be true? How could Soros' hedge fund have made 8% in 2008 while others have crashed and burned around him? Answer. Well, look, In America, you can get the best politicians you can buy, they used to say. Now it's spread up to the level of the Banana Republic president that we have. We now have a Banana Republic presidency. Now, why do I say that? Well, I'll give you a few reasons, but I'll give you one specific. You want one specific? Here's one specific. Obama has insulted the United Kingdom by picking a fundraising crony, a lawyer and banker from Chicago, to be the ambassador to the United Kingdom. And they say, in the London papers are saying that raises questions about Obama's commitment to the special relationship with Britain, number one. And number two, by selecting Sussman, Mr. Sussman, a lawyer who bundled money for Obama. You hear this? He bundled money for Obama to make him president. And now he's being rewarded. They say this is exactly what's done in a banana republic. You pay to play. Blagojevich pay to play. Okay? So now we have Obama pay to play. You understand how this works? That's who you have as president right now. Pay to play. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. You're listening to the greatest show on earth, The Savage Nation. Obama's choice for Attorney General Eric Holder's recent statements calling America a nation of cowards did not fit well with America. Looking how far this country has come and the sacrifices that were made in the relative short history of our country shows just how out of touch many on the left are when it comes to living in our great country. Dr. Peter Breggin joins us today with a report on why the elitist left may not love America the way we do.
Thanks, Michael. Today's subject, is America beautiful or not? Attorney General Eric Holder recently described all of us Americans as cowards in dealing with racism. There are echoes of this cynical view in Michelle Obama's campaign remarks that she felt proud of America for the first time in her life. She elaborated that people now want change, and then she declared, "I have been desperate to see our country moving in that direction and just not feeling so alone in my frustration and disappointment." Alone, frustrated, disappointed, basically alienated from America. These are the scornful complaints of today's liberal elite. This was not the attitude of Abraham Lincoln, who loved the spirit and principles of the nation so dearly that he suffered through sending vast numbers of youth to their deaths in a dreadful war that eventually would free the slaves. Lincoln knew firsthand America's worst flaws, but he also knew her people were not cowards. Their deaths had hallowed the battlefields with their vast and endless graves. Cynicism about America did not characterize Martin Luther King Jr., who addressed the nation from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in 1963, criticized inequality in an uncompromising fashion, and then in bell-like tones expressed his vision of a better America in the future. King loved America and appealed to her better nature. I did not even hear this kind of cynicism when, filled with overwhelming feelings of loss and despair after King's assassination, I attended the memorial service for him at Washington Cathedral so many decades ago.
So whose cynical view do they express?
It sounds more like young John Kerry, who returned from the Vietnam War, called our soldiers cowards, and under oath before Congress described atrocities so gruesome that no one at the time guessed that he had made them up out of his own feverish imagination. To this very day, this cynical view of America continues to be expressed by the liberal elite, who find America a disappointing, frustrating, and cowardly place, even after the sacrifices made by so many generations to defend her freedom abroad and to fight racism at home.
Many of us have criticisms of America. But what is it about the liberal elite that makes their disappointment so ugly in its tone?
The smug liberal's view is ugly because it is loveless. Let's take the issue down to the basics of human nature with an analogy to marriage. As a psychiatrist, I sometimes work with men who say they can no longer look at their wives with love, supposedly because of this or that cosmetic problem and sometimes because of some way in which they've changed in their attitudes. Often it has to do with aging. Even if she's still in her 20s, she has wrinkles she didn't have when they first met. She's a little rounder than she once was. She gets aggravated a little more easily. Often these men, and occasionally women too, end up feeling ashamed of the way their spouses look. They feel put off by these physical changes as well as by any other kinds of changes, and insist that's why they are losing their romantic and loving feelings. Actually, these guys have it backward. They stopped loving, and then they became preoccupied with complaints. The source of the problem does not lie in the woman's flaws, but in the man's inability or unwillingness to love. All of us are infinitely flawed, but when we love one another, we don't see the imperfections. We see the person. We may even see the spirit within the person, the soul. When my wife Ginger worries over the details of her maturing appearance, I often don't even know what she's talking about. I haven't noticed. When I look at her, I see the woman I have loved for 25 years.
How do you relate to the progressive attitude towards America?
Michael, the liberal elite often looks at America the way the loveless husband looks at his wife. To me, it's like turning over in bed in the morning and feeling judgmental toward the woman you are no longer willing to cherish. When they chat among themselves or with Europeans, these disappointed liberals feel confirmed. Sharing their critical attitudes with other Amerophobics feels good to them and breeds camaraderie, perhaps like men getting together to complain about their wives. Genuine love reaches to the essence of that which is loved. Leftists believe that America, in essence, is corrupt. They feel guilty and ashamed about being a part of her family. They even take pleasure in degrading the founding fathers and purging these great men from the school curriculum. To them, America is like an apple with a rotten core, and they make a sour face when they bite into her.
Well, how do more traditional Americans feel about our country when they're criticizing her? What's the difference between how people love the country when they criticize America and people like the left who hate the country and their criticism?
Freedom-loving, more traditional Americans may be equally or even more upset about what's going on in the nation, but they believe that liberty and responsibility reflect the underlying spirit of our country. And they recognize and love her spirit, even when she seems to abandon her principles. I would ask disappointed liberals to re-examine their feelings about America. See what a grand old lady she really is. Of course she can be greedy, insensitive, and maybe even downright nasty at times, but look into her soul. Acknowledge the essential beauty of her principles and values. Remember her heroic history. Witness how she continues to inspire liberty around the world. And let yourself love her. It will be good for you and good for America. This brings us to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. You can find me at Breggin.com and all these reports. Also at Breggin.com. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Dr. Breggin. We may not always agree on what America does, but the elitist attitude towards America certainly makes it worse. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation. Savage.
Tommy, homo-loving sons of guns.
They've had enough of these sickos, the fools of Hollywood. The Hollywood idiots of the day are none other than Sean Pencil, and that's character who wrote the story about a homosexual mayor. Frankly, I lived in the city when Harvey Milk was mayor. Big deal. I mean, other than the fact that he was gay, what did he do that's so important? You'd think he was Michelangelo, Albert Einstein, or Jonas Salk, all in one tuxedo. Tell me what he did. Nothing. But this shows you the distortion of people in the world of drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Eventually, it will erode your mind, your soul, and your heart. And so my headline today on MichaelSavage.com and on The Savage Nation is quite direct. The Hollywood gays have hijacked the Oscars to push their agenda. What should I do? Ask you if you agree with me? I know you agree with me. And if you don't listen to the show. Go listen to NPR. Okay? Either go listen to NPR or watch that other slime ball who was up there introducing documentaries. Another genius who failed in radio. I have to go back to the bottom of the page, my website, because, you know, one picture is worth 1,000 words. On the bottom of MichaelSavage.com, there's a picture of Meryl Streep and Sophia Loren. And the headline is, Oscars reach senility. They can't even do drag right anymore. Now, the reason I say that is if you look at the schmatas these two wore, let me take you back. Think back to your grandmother's wedding. Think way back to your grandmother's wedding. Think of all of the oldest women there and the dresses they wore. And think of how, like, the mold got to you. The moths were literally flying out of the taffeta. And what it did to you as a kid, you had, like, a freaky feeling that you were watching a horror show with those dresses. That's what these two wore. Now, Sophia Loren was once drop-dead gorgeous. Meryl Streep, also a beautiful woman in her day. Time and gravity catches up with all of us, including me. But I wouldn't go to an Oscar show wearing my grandmother's dress. This is astounding. This makes us wish for Tony Perkins in Psycho. I mean, Tony Perkins in Psycho had a nicer dress than Sophia Loren and Meryl Streep. That's all I can say. You remember the dress that he wore in Psycho, Tony Perkins in Psycho 1, when he found it up and he came down the transvestite knife job, and he wore the grandmother's dress with the moths flying out of it? That's what these two looked like. And to me, they symbolize the Oscars today. Oscars reach senility. They can't even do drag right anymore. That's why a man could get up a stumble-bum phony like Sean Penn and give a speech in commie, homo, bum, homo, lonely, sons of guns, and they would laugh. Incidentally, you want to see the reality? Third lowest rated Oscars of all time. Third lowest rated Oscars of all time. I turned it on once. I turned it off within 2 minutes. I couldn't believe it. Just like a high school graduation. Now, Mickey Rourke is a far better actor than Sean Penn. We all know that. Mickey Rourke should have won, but he played an actual man. He was nixed by the committee. Now, you got to understand something. This is not that important a story. It's far more important to talk about Soros. Is he running the world's economic systems? But since you are a general audience and you're incapable of discussing the collapse of the economy and who actually did it to you and what they're going to do to you next, I'd rather talk about the dresses of Hollywood and the other assorted things to do with the Oscars. How many years have I been telling you that the Oscars were created in the 1930s as a trade show to gin up support for a relatively new industry called the movies? So in other words, if the carding industry has a couple of meetings a year for garbage men of the year, most innovative sanitation man of the year, that's a trade show. We all go to trade shows if you're in a business. This is no different. Only because they're larger than life on the screens, you think they're better than you are. But in fact, most of them are worse than you are. Not all, but most of those in Hollywood are worse than you. So they put on a trade show, and now they've gotten so whacked out with their insular natures that they hijacked the entire Oscar ceremony to push homosexual marriage and the homosexual agenda. This is all creative artist agencies doing, in my opinion. CAA, as you well know, if you've studied Hollywood, is run by homosexuals. These were men who were once married, who left their wives to run off with other men. And consequently, they have one obsession. Doesn't matter if the economy's collapsing. Doesn't matter if China's on the march. Doesn't matter if the sea ice is melting. Doesn't matter. All that matters is the homosexual agenda. So if Creative Artists Agency, the most powerful agency in Hollywood, wants a rather tepid movie to win and wants a whacked up actor to win, it doesn't matter what Mickey Rourke does. But moving on. Once again, the neo-Marxists are making noises about nationalizing the banks. They say that nationalization is the only way of saving them. And now the regular crowd of Washington insiders, Democrats and Republicans alike, are weighing in to say, this is just what should be done. In the last week, Alan Greenspan, who is perhaps more responsible than any other person alive for the collapse of our economy, said that it might be necessary to nationalize some banks in order to facilitate a swift and orderly restructuring. The Republican in name only, the turncoat, Senator Lindsey Graham, said that he wouldn't take the idea of bank nationalization off the table. All of the usual suspects there. If we give Obama and the neo-Marxists complete socialist power over our banking system, they will not stop there. They will not stop there. They will try to nationalize the media after that. And we will be facing a Venezuela-like regime in the United States of America. Well, here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. The big story is that the Hollywood gays have hijacked the Oscars to push their agenda for homosexual marriage, equal rights for homosexuals and lesbians, and we found it to be insipid, boring, and so out of town that we turned it off after 2 minutes. On the right side, he who smelt it dealt it. Oh, we used to say that in grade school. I realize it's quite below the level of NPR and Vivaldi music. But we asked, how come Soros is the one who was saying the world economy is crashed and it's doom and gloom? How come it's Soros, we asked? Well, we looked it up and we found out that the Soros hedge fund made 8% last year, while most others crashed. And we wonder what he knew and when he knew it and why. It seems that an 8% return on a hedge fund in 08 is a big deal. And weren't we taught during the Madoff scandal to question such big returns while others are losing? Yeah, but since he created Obama and Obama's his man in the White House, we kind of doubt there'll be an investigation of this man who seems to be running the world's economy named George Soros, who also funded Acorn, so far as we know. And Acorn has dug in very deeply to keep owners in their homes. In fact, they're rioting in the streets of New York. The thugs are calling themselves home defenders. That's right. It's the Obama street thugs with Acorn money. Isn't it nice to be king and to take money from the suckers called the taxpayers to fund your own army? Wow. Also on MichaelSavage.com is this headline, Press Baron Beaten by the Times, and that's Rupert Murdoch, who they say has made one mistake after another by being so in love with newspapers at the wrong time. So sad to see that Leprechaun's boss is in trouble. On the bottom of MichaelSavage.com is an interesting article. You see two old movie stars, wearing gowns that you would find, well, in a museum. Meryl Streep and Sophia Loren have pulled off a hard-to-achieve double fashion don't, because you won't believe it. Now, picture weddings that you went to when you were a young boy with your grandmother there. That's who Meryl Streep and Sophia Loren look like. They look like women at your grandmother's wedding in a daguerreotype. So my headline is, Oscars reach senility. They can't even do drag right anymore. Then there's another little story here, and they're like a Muslim-run sex bar for teenagers with a hookah pipe and all and a bed for getting sex, run by a guy in the Lower East Side by the name of Muhammad, was closed by the cops, well, at least temporarily. They reopened it immediately after because, well, what goes around comes around, I guess, in New York. You got to pay for those pensions somehow. Those are some of the articles on MichaelSavage.com. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.